A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He read a Times of Israel piece about fiber optic guided drones being used by Hezbollah against IDF positions, and it raised a question that honestly had me scratching my head too. How do you guide a flying drone with a physical wire? What's the threat, practically speaking? And the piece apparently says Israel only started looking at countermeasures during this current war, which Daniel found hard to believe. Given these things have been buzzing around Ukraine for over a year, that caught my attention too. There's a lot here.
Before we dive in, quick note. Today's episode is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if the script suddenly knows more about fiber optics than I do, that's why.
Which would be a first.
But seriously, this is one of those technologies that sounds almost absurd when you first hear about it. A drone trailing a hair-thin glass wire through the air, unwinding from a spool like a spider paying out silk. And yet, it's real, it's cheap, and it just killed a 19-year-old IDF soldier 2 days ago.
April 26th, in the southern Lebanon town of Taibi, he and his crew were repairing their tank when a Hezbollah FPV drone slammed into them. Six others wounded, four seriously. And then, this part is grim. As a helicopter arrived to evacuate the wounded, Hezbollah launched two more explosive drones at the exposed troops. One was intercepted. The second crashed meters from the soldiers and the helicopter before detonating.
The operational sophistication there is worth noting. This isn't random harassment fire. They targeted the initial repair operation, then timed a follow-up strike precisely when they knew a medevac helicopter would be landing. That requires real-time intelligence and coordinated operators.
The soldier's girlfriend said at his funeral that she saw his death in real time via video feed, which is a detail that sticks with you, but it also tells us something about the technology. The video quality is good enough that someone watching remotely could identify what they were seeing.
Which brings us to the core of what makes fiber optic guidance different. And Daniel's question about how this even works is exactly the right place to start, because the mechanism is what makes it so difficult to counter.
Walk me through it. You've got a drone, you've got a spool of glass fiber, and you've got an operator somewhere. How does the wire not immediately snap?
The cable is astonishingly thin. We're talking about a glass fiber roughly the diameter of a human hair. It's wound onto a spool mounted on the drone itself, and as the drone flies forward, the fiber pays out behind it. The spool is designed to release with minimal tension, so the drone isn't dragging a taut line through the air. Instead, the fiber just sort of settles onto the ground or vegetation behind it as it goes. The operator stays stationary and the drone carries the entire spool.
The physical connection runs all the way from the operator's control station, through this gossamer thread lying across the terrain, up to the drone. And that thread is carrying both the control signals going up and the video feed coming back down.
And here's why that matters so much. In a conventional radio-controlled drone, the operator sends commands via radio frequency, and the drone sends video back the same way. Both of those signals can be jammed. In fact, electronic warfare has become the primary defense against drones. You blanket the area with interference, the drone loses its link, and it either crashes or hovers uselessly until its battery dies. Ukraine has been doing this at massive scale, but a fiber optic drone emits zero radio signals. It's electromagnetically silent. Your jammers are useless against it.
All the electronic warfare systems that the IDF has invested in, the backpack jammers, the vehicle-mounted systems, the directional antennas, they're paperweights against this.
And not only can't you jam it, you can't even detect it passively. There are sensors that can pick up the radio emissions from a conventional drone and alert you that something is incoming. A fiber optic drone gives off no such signature. You might hear it if it gets close enough, but by then you've got maybe seconds.
The video quality. You mentioned the girlfriend watching in real time. That's not just a grim detail, it's tactically significant.
With radio-controlled drones, especially in built-up areas or forested terrain, the video feed degrades. You get static, dropped frames, compression artifacts. But a fiber optic cable provides near-perfect high-bandwidth video regardless of terrain. The operator can fly the drone at extremely low altitude, threading through trees or between buildings, and still see everything in crisp detail. The Atlantic Council had a piece on this last year. These drones can operate in environments where radio signals would be completely blocked.
You've got a silent, jam-proof, high-resolution reconnaissance and strike platform that costs...
The fiber optic cable itself runs about $30 per kilometer when purchased in bulk. A complete fiber optic FPV drone with a 10-kilometer range costs roughly $1,200 per unit. That's according to a Ukrainian commander from the 12th Special Forces Brigade, Azov, who spoke to the war zone last May.
$1,200. An IDF Merkava tank costs somewhere north of $3.5 million. The cost asymmetry here is almost absurd.
The RPG warhead that Hezbollah is strapping to these things, that's maybe a few hundred dollars more, and they've got stockpiles of them. So for under $2,000 total, you've created a weapon that can hunt multi-million dollar armored vehicles, and the primary defense against drones doesn't work on it.
Which brings me to the part Daniel found hard to believe, that the IDF only started looking at countermeasures during this current war. Is that actually true?
Here's what the Times of Israel reported, citing independent military analyst Jacob Janowski. Fiber optic FPV drones first appeared in Ukraine in spring of 2024, introduced by Russia. Ukraine quickly followed suit. It took more than 6 months to refine early designs into something reliable, so by late 2024, this was a known, demonstrated threat on a major battlefield. Yet the IDF's Directorate of Defense Research and Development didn't issue a public call for countermeasure solutions until April 11th of this year, nearly 2 years after the technology surfaced and weeks into active fighting with Hezbollah.
That's a pretty significant gap, and I can already hear the criticism. How did Israel's vaunted military technical establishment miss this?
I think there are a few layers to this. First, Hezbollah's drone capability was, until recently, fairly limited. They had some Iranian-supplied drones, some commercial quadcopters, but nothing at the scale or sophistication that would force a crash program. The threat assessment probably rated the drone problem as manageable with existing electronic warfare systems.
Ukraine was fighting these things for over a year. Surely there's intelligence sharing between Kyiv and Jerusalem?
That's actually one of the more interesting questions here, and I'm not sure we have a clear answer. Ukraine has developed tactical workarounds. They shoot them down with small arms when they can. They're testing automated turret systems. They've learned to operate in bad weather when fiber optic drones struggle. But there doesn't seem to have been a visible, urgent technology transfer on this specific threat. It's possible the channels exist, but the urgency wasn't communicated effectively. It's also possible that Israel assessed the threat differently because the operational environment in southern Lebanon is not identical to eastern Ukraine. Terrain, for one. Southern Lebanon has hills, valleys, vegetation, a lot of places for an operator to hide, and a lot of obstacles for a trailing fiber cable to snag on, which, ironically, might have led analysts to underestimate the system's reliability. If you look at a fiber optic drone and think that wire is going to get caught on every olive tree between here and the border, you might not prioritize countering it. But it turns out the cables are more resilient than expected, and operators have gotten very good at route planning.
The ranges involved. The Times of Israel piece mentions the IDF initially assessed these drones could only reach a few kilometers, but then discovered launches from up to 15 kilometers away.
And in Ukraine, Russian operators have used them at ranges up to 30 kilometers. That's a game changer because it means the operator can be well behind their own lines, in a basement somewhere, completely safe, while guiding a precision strike deep into Israeli positions.
Let's talk about what actually happens when one of these things is incoming. You're a soldier at a forward position. You've got a jammer that's been effective against conventional drones. A fiber optic drone is coming at you. What do you do?
According to Janowski, and I'm quoting his assessment to the Times of Israel, unless you're lucky or the operator makes a mistake, the only reliable counter is to shoot them down. That's it. You try to hit a small, fast-moving target with small arms fire before it hits you. And these FPV drones are not large. We're talking about something the size of a large bird, moving at high speed, often coming from an angle you're not watching.
If you're repairing a tank, your attention is on the repair. You're not scanning the sky with a rifle.
Which is exactly what happened at Taibe. Soldiers working on their vehicle, focused on a mechanical task, and the drone comes in. The follow-up strike on the medevac helicopter is even more chilling because it shows the operators understood exactly what they were doing. They waited for the helicopter, they knew where it would land, and they timed the second wave accordingly.
The girlfriend watching in real time. That means someone was likely streaming or recording the drone's video feed. Hezbollah has released multiple videos of FPV drones homing in on Israeli vehicles. This is propaganda for them, but it also demonstrates that the video link is reliable enough to produce usable footage.
That's the other side of the fiber optic advantage. With a radio-controlled drone, your video feed might cut out at the moment of impact because of interference or signal loss. With fiber, you get the full cinematic experience. It's grim, but from a psychological warfare perspective, that footage is valuable.
What are the actual countermeasure options? If jamming doesn't work, what does?
Let me run through what's being explored. First, the obvious one, kinetic interception, shoot them down. But that requires detection, and detection is hard when there's no radio signature. You're relying on visual spotting, acoustic sensors, or radar. Radar can pick up small drones, but it's not perfect, especially at low altitude against ground clutter.
Acoustic detection means you're hearing it when it's already close.
Second approach, automated turrets. These are being tested in Ukraine. Essentially a machine gun or cannon mated to an optical tracking system that can identify and engage small drones automatically. But none of these are deployed at scale yet. The technology is still experimental, and there are serious concerns about fratricide and civilian casualties with automated weapons.
The third approach? You mentioned something about the cable itself being a vulnerability.
This is what I think of as the cable paradox. The very thing that makes these drones immune to jamming, the physical tether, is also their greatest weakness. The cable is hair-thin glass fiber. It can be cut by rotor blades. There are documented cases in Ukraine of one drone accidentally cutting another drone's cable with its own rotors. The cable can snag on trees, fences, power lines, buildings. If the operator makes a sharp turn, the drone can fly into its own trailing cable. And if the cable breaks, the drone is dead. It has no backup radio link.
Could you deploy a counter drone specifically designed to cut cables? Something like a net launcher or even another drone with extended cutting surfaces?
That's exactly the kind of low-tech solution that might work. Deploy nets across likely approach corridors. Use wire obstacles, essentially strings or cables strung between poles that would snag the fiber. Launch interceptor drones that trail their own cutting lines. These are all variations on a theme. You don't need to destroy the drone, you just need to sever its connection to the operator.
None of this requires a multi-million dollar development program. It's basically...
It's a bit more sophisticated than that in practice, but conceptually, yes. The challenge is that you need to deploy these countermeasures across a wide area, and the drone can approach from any direction. A net barrier only works if the drone flies into it. If the operator sees the barrier through the drone's video feed, they can just fly around it or over it.
Which brings us back to detection. If you don't know the drone is coming, you can position your countermeasures effectively.
This is where I think the IDF's delayed response starts to look less like negligence and more like a genuinely hard problem. Because the electronic warfare approach to drone defense was elegant, you blanket an area with jamming, and any radio-controlled drone in that area becomes useless. It's a zone defense. But fiber-optic drones break that model. You now need point defense at every potential target, or you need a way to detect and intercept them at range. Neither is easy.
The cost dynamic flips too. With jamming, one jammer can protect a whole area. With kinetic interception, you need multiple systems, each one probably costing far more than the $1,200 drone it's shooting down.
Hezbollah knows this. They're using a cost imposition strategy. They spend a few $1,000s on a drone, and Israel has to spend millions on countermeasures, plus the operational cost of responding. And if the drone kills one soldier or damages one vehicle, the payoff is enormous from their perspective. The IDF has reported dozens of drone-related injuries in recent weeks, mostly minor, but the cumulative effect is real.
Let me ask about the supply chain here. Where is Hezbollah getting these drones? Are they manufacturing them?
The Times of Israel reports they're built from off-the-shelf components and three-dimensional printed parts. The fiber spools, the motors, the cameras, the flight controllers, all of this is commercially available. The fiber optic cable itself is used in telecommunications. None of this requires a state-level industrial base. A reasonably well-equipped workshop can produce these.
Which means sanctions and export controls are essentially useless here. You can't embargo off-the-shelf drone parts and fiber optic cable. The global market is too large.
This is the broader trend in warfare that fiber optic drones exemplify. The barriers to entry for precision strike capability have collapsed. 20 years ago, if you wanted to hit a specific vehicle from 10 kilometers away, you needed a multi-million dollar guided missile and the infrastructure to support it. Now you need $1,200 and someone who's good at video games.
The Ukraine experience is instructive here. You mentioned that Russian operators have been using these at ranges up to 30 kilometers. What's the success rate like?
Ukrainian commander Yas, the one from Azov, reported roughly a 50% probability that a functional fiber optic drone will strike its target. Compare that to as low as 30% for radio-controlled drones, where jamming and frequency congestion are constant problems. So you're getting a significantly higher hit rate for about the same cost.
There are limitations. You mentioned the cable snagging issue.
The cable can get tangled in vegetation, especially in forested areas. The drone is less maneuverable because it's trailing a physical line. Sharp turns are risky. Operator error is a major factor. If you fly too aggressively, you can snap the cable. There are documented cases of drones cutting each other's cables mid-flight, and the spool adds weight, which reduces flight time or payload capacity. Also, these drones still represent less than 5% of Commander Yas's inventory because supply is limited and there are long waiting lists for quality manufacturers.
It's not a wonder weapon. It's a niche capability that's extremely dangerous in specific scenarios.
And that niche happens to align disturbingly well with Hezbollah's operational needs. They're fighting across a relatively short distance. The border region is not the vast expanses of eastern Ukraine. The terrain provides cover for operators. They're targeting fixed or slow-moving positions rather than maneuvering formations. And they have a steady supply pipeline through Iran and their own manufacturing.
The question I keep coming back to is whether this changes the strategic calculus of the ceasefire. Hezbollah launched these drones during a truce. The IDF retaliated with airstrikes that killed 14 people in Lebanon, the deadliest day since the ceasefire began. Are fiber optic drones making ceasefires harder to maintain because they're so hard to defend against?
That's a really sharp question. I think there's something to it. A ceasefire is inherently fragile. It depends on both sides calculating that the benefits of restraint outweigh the benefits of escalation. But if one side has a weapon that is cheap, deniable to some extent, and extremely difficult to defend against, that lowers the threshold for violations. You can inflict casualties without committing large forces or taking significant risks. The temptation to use the capability is high.
From the defender's perspective, every successful drone strike creates domestic pressure to respond forcefully. The IDF can't just absorb casualties from a weapon they have no answer for and do nothing. So the retaliation cycle accelerates.
We saw this play out in real time. Drone kills soldier, IDF strikes back, 14 dead in Lebanon, and now we're in the worst violence since the truce was signed, all triggered by a $1,200 drone with a spool of glass fiber.
Let's talk about the Israeli response on the technology side. The Defense Ministry ordered 5,000 FPV drones from an Israeli firm called XTND last year. Is Israel adopting the same technology for its own use?
Yes, and this is the natural response. If you can't defend against it effectively, you at least want to be able to use it yourself. But there's an irony here. Israel adopting fiber optic FPV drones means both sides will be operating them in the same airspace, which creates a kind of mutual vulnerability. Neither side has a good defense, so both can inflict casualties. It's not quite mutually assured destruction, but it's a step in that direction.
The XTN drones, are those fiber optic guided specifically?
The reporting doesn't specify the guidance method for that particular order, but XTN does produce tethered and semi-autonomous drone systems. The broader point is that Israel is ramping up its own FPV drone capability, which suggests they recognize both the offensive potential and the defensive gap.
One thing I haven't heard you mention is directed energy weapons, lasers, microwave systems. Are those viable against fiber optic drones?
In theory, yes. A laser doesn't care whether the drone is radio controlled or fiber guided. It just needs to put enough thermal energy on target to destroy it. Israel has been developing laser-based air defense systems, notably the Iron Beam, which is designed to complement Iron Dome against rockets and drones. But Iron Beam is not yet operationally deployed at scale, and it's primarily designed for rockets and larger drones. Against a small, fast FPV drone at close range, a laser might work, but you'd need the system to be everywhere, not just at fixed installations. High-power microwave systems work by frying electronics. They could potentially disable a fiber-optic drone's flight controller or camera even if they can't jam its communications. But the range is limited, and you're back to the point defense problem. You need the system at the right place at the right time.
We're left with a threat that's cheap, proliferating, and for which no scalable defense exists. That seems like a pretty significant shift in the tactical landscape.
I want to push back slightly on the no defense exists framing. No single silver bullet defense exists, but layered approaches can reduce the threat. Better detection. Acoustic sensors, small radar systems, optical scanning. Kinetic interceptors, automated guns, interceptor drones, maybe even trained birds of prey, which sounds ridiculous but has been explored. Passive barriers, nets, wires, obstacles that snag cables. And operational changes, moving more at night or in bad weather when these drones are less effective, varying routines to avoid predictable patterns, hardening vehicles against RPG strikes.
The trained birds of prey thing? You're not seriously suggesting the IDF deploy Falcons against drones?
I'm saying it's been explored by other militaries. The Dutch police trained eagles to intercept drones. The practical results were mixed, and the program was eventually shelved, but the concept isn't entirely absurd. A large bird can absolutely disable a small drone. Whether it's practical at scale is another question entirely.
I'm now picturing an arms race between Hezbollah drone operators and IDF Falconers, which is either the most absurd or the most medieval modern hybrid warfare image I've encountered.
Welcome to 21st century conflict. We've got fiber optic guided munitions on one side, and people are seriously discussing nets and birds on the other.
Let me pull on another thread here. Daniel mentioned in his prompt that he doesn't understand exactly how the wired guidance works, and I think that gets at something important. This technology sounds almost like a cartoon, a drone trailing a string. It doesn't sound real, or at least it doesn't sound like it should work reliably in combat conditions.
That's part of why I think the IDF may have been slow to take it seriously. If you described a fiber optic drone to a military planner 5 years ago, they'd probably list a dozen reasons it wouldn't work. The cable would break. It would get tangled. The spool mechanism would fail. The video quality wouldn't justify the hassle. And for the first iterations in Ukraine, many of those criticisms were valid. It took more than 6 months of refinement to get to a reliable system.
Now it's reliable enough to kill.
Reliable enough that Hezbollah is using it in coordinated, multi-drone strikes with real-time intelligence. This isn't a hobbyist experiment anymore. It's an operational capability.
What about the human element on the operator side? Flying one of these things, is it difficult?
FPV drone piloting is a skill, but it's one that can be learned. The controls are similar to video game controllers in many cases. The fiber optic aspect adds some complexity. You need to manage your cable, avoid sharp turns, plan routes that minimize snagging. But the basics are the same. And Hezbollah has had time to train operators, possibly with Iranian assistance.
Iran has been using drones extensively. They've supplied them to Russia. They've used them in their own operations. I'd be surprised if there wasn't technical assistance flowing to Hezbollah on this.
The fiber optic FPV drone didn't emerge in a vacuum. Russia developed it, Ukraine adopted it, and the knowledge has spread to various channels. Iran has close ties with Russia and close ties with Hezbollah. The technology transfer pipeline is obvious, even if we can't trace every component.
Where does this go from here? What's the next iteration?
Longer ranges, for one. If 30 kilometers is possible now, 40 or 50 is probably achievable with better spool design and lighter cable. Better autonomous features. The drone could follow a pre-programmed route and only require operator input for the terminal phase, reducing the risk of cable breaks from pilot error. Swarm tactics. Multiple fiber optic drones operating in coordination, perhaps with some acting as decoys. And eventually, some form of autonomous terminal guidance where the drone identifies and engages targets without operator input for the final seconds.
The autonomous terminal guidance piece is concerning because it removes the one remaining limitation. If the cable breaks during the final approach, the drone can still complete its mission.
We're already seeing the early stages of this in Ukraine. Drones with basic computer vision that can track a target even if the video link degrades. Combine that with fiber optic guidance for the approach and autonomous terminal homing, and you've got a weapon that's very difficult to stop.
This conversation has been fairly grim. Is there any good news here?
The good news, or at least the less bad news, is that the same physical limitations that make fiber optic drones vulnerable today will persist. A cable is a cable. It can be cut, snagged, or broken. The drones are small and have limited payload capacity. They're not going to destroy a tank with an RPG warhead unless they hit exactly the right spot. And the supply of quality systems is still constrained. These aren't being produced at the scale of conventional munitions.
The Hezbollah drones in particular. The Times of Israel notes that their RPG warheads are only marginally effective against Israeli armored vehicles. The fatality at Tabia appears to have been a direct hit on exposed personnel, not a penetration of the tank itself.
If the soldiers had been buttoned up inside the Merkaba, the outcome might have been different. But soldiers can't stay buttoned up indefinitely. They have to repair vehicles, move between positions, conduct operations. And Hezbollah knows this. They're targeting the moments of vulnerability.
Which is why the countermeasures need to be about more than just protecting the vehicles. It's about protecting the people when they're outside the armor.
That loops back to the detection problem. If you can give soldiers even 30 seconds of warning that a drone is incoming, they can take cover, they can try to shoot it down, they can at least not be caught completely unaware while repairing a track.
30 seconds doesn't sound like much.
It's an eternity compared to 0 seconds. Look, I think the broader lesson here is about adaptability. The fiber optic drone is a creative solution to a specific problem. Electronic warfare was making radio-controlled drones ineffective, so someone said, what if we just use a wire? It's almost retro. Wire-guided missiles have existed for decades, the Tau-W missile being the classic example. But applying that concept to a cheap, disposable FPV drone is innovative, and the response needs to be equally creative.
The Tau missile comparison is interesting because those are wire-guided too, but they're in a completely different category. Expensive, heavy, limited supply. The innovation here is democratizing wire guidance down to the hobbyist level.
A Tau missile costs tens of thousands of dollars and requires specialized training and equipment. A fiber optic FPV drone costs $1,200 and can be flown by someone with a few months of practice. The precision is not quite the same, but it's good enough.
Good enough is a phrase that comes up a lot in discussions of asymmetric warfare. The cheap weapon doesn't have to be better than the expensive one. It just has to be good enough to impose costs.
Good enough killed a 19-year-old 2 days ago.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The average cumulus cloud weighs about 1.1 million pounds, roughly the same as 100 elephants. The weight is entirely water droplets and ice crystals suspended in the air column.
What can listeners actually take away from this? Most people aren't going to be facing down fiber optic drones, but there are some broader lessons here.
First, the technology adoption gap. If something is being used on one battlefield, assume it will appear on others. The fact that these drones were in Ukraine for nearly 2 years before Israel issued a public call for countermeasures is a cautionary tale about institutional inertia, even in highly capable military establishments.
Second, the cost asymmetry problem isn't going away. Cheap, commercially sourced components can produce weapons that force expensive defensive responses. This applies beyond military contexts. It's relevant for anyone thinking about security, whether it's corporate, infrastructure, or personal.
Third, low-tech countermeasures deserve more attention than they usually get. Nets, wires, obstacles. These aren't glamorous, but they might be more practical than multi-million dollar directed energy weapons, especially for point defense of specific assets.
Fourth, the human element remains central. The soldier killed at Tabea wasn't inside a tank. He was outside it, doing maintenance. Operational patterns, situational awareness, and basic precautions matter even when the technology on both sides is sophisticated.
I'd add a fifth. Don't assume the adversary is stupid. Hezbollah timed a follow-up strike on a medevac helicopter. That's not random luck. That's deliberate planning based on understanding of IDF medical evacuation procedures. Underestimating the other side's tactical sophistication is a recurring failure mode.
It's a recurring problem, you mean?
Yes, fine. A recurring problem.
One forward-looking thought before we wrap. The fiber optic drone is a reminder that defensive systems optimized for one threat can become obsolete almost overnight. The IDF's electronic warfare approach to drones was effective, until it wasn't. The next threat will probably bypass whatever countermeasures get developed for fiber optic drones. The cycle doesn't end.
That's why adaptability, institutional, tactical, and technological, matters more than any specific system. The military that can learn and adjust fastest has the advantage, regardless of whose hardware is more advanced on paper.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you found this useful, leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.